Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Service and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts, we examine different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Now, in today's podcast, just like we did over the previous years, we take a look at stories from everyday life in Kilkenny during the year 1923. Although the Civil War went on until May 1923, it is likely our grandparents or great-grandparents living through that year had non-Civil War stories they were interested in also. Once again, the stories selected here range from the humorous to the absolute tragic. Many have absolutely nothing to do with the ongoing Civil War. In any war, everyday life must and does go on the best it can. Now, I suppose with a Kilkenny-based podcast, there's no better place to start than Miss Hurling. 1923 turned out to be a very special year for Kilkenny. However, it was the 1922 Hurling Championship that was still being played. A bit like COVID, the championship kept on getting delayed because of the Civil War upheaval. To put everything into context, the Kilkenny senior hurling team played their very first match of the 1922 championship in April 1922, which, as you'd expect, was fairly usual. So far, so good. They beat Laois in that Leinster semi-final in O'More Park in Portlaoise. So April 1922, just to put it in the context again, was just a few months after the treaty had been signed in London. The country at this time was becoming divided, and just a few weeks after that Leinster hurling semi-final, the Battle of Kilkenny Cissy broke out. And then, of course, in June, the Civil War proper broke out, if I can call it that. So the Kilkenny hurlers didn't get to play their next game, that being the Leinster final, until November 1922, 7 months later. Now, the Civil War was obviously still on at that stage. However, relative to the summer months, which witnessed these big set-piece battles all around the country, by November, things were quieter in general life, besides the small anti-treaty columns that were moving around the countryside who were still launching attacks. Anyways, it was a good result for Kilkenny in that Leinster final. They defeated Dublin by 8 points. So from November 1922, when they won Leinster, Kilkenny had to wait until September 1923 to play the actual final. So that was 10 months later. Kilkenny had to wait that extra time because the Munster final had ended in a draw and the resulting replay was needed. And then the winners of that, Tipperary, had to play a semi-final game, which really stretched things out. Kilkenny didn't have to play an All-Ireland semi-final for the 1922 championship, as there was no Ulster team taking part. Tipperary did, and they defeated Galway in that one. And at least by September 1923, the Civil War had come to an end. So for the average person, things were starting to get back to normal by then, albeit there was this new free state of Ireland that people were getting used to still. So the All-Ireland Hurling Final for 1922 was actually played in Croke Park on the 9th of September 1923. It was certainly a nice distraction to have for Kilkenny folk. And the result was even better. On the scoreline of Kilkenny 4-2 to Tipperary 2-6, Kilkenny defeated their arch rivals by 2 points. Now, goals were more common in this era due to the shape of the boss. There was much more ground hurling and pulling and overhead striking, i.e. kind of pulling on the ball overhead, than would be the case today, hence the higher goal count. The shape of the boss also meant there was very little solo runs because you couldn't just balance the ball on the hurley. It was nearly impossible. So I suppose hurling back then was a lot more like the current game of shinty in Scotland, if anyone has seen that played on TV. The All-Ireland final game itself had ebbed and flowed throughout, with Tipperary in the lead for large portions of the game. It was a great victory for Kilkenny in such a troubled year. The cherry on top was beating Tipperary, which is always a special occasion even now. The last time Kilkenny had contested an All-Ireland final was in 1916, and Tipperary had defeated them on that day. And would you believe, Kilkenny would not beat Tip again in the Hurling Championship until 1967, nearly half a century later. And by 1923, it was also 10 years since Kilkenny last won in All-Ireland, that being in 1913 with Drogh Welsh securing victory with his team then. So Kilkenny's 8th All-Ireland in September 1923, which this was the first with a new team, a new era, as the previous 7 titles had all been won by the same core group of players from 1904 till 1913. And there was another special piece of history on that day in Croke Park in September 23. It was the first time Kilkenny had been presented with the Liam McCarthy Cup. Although we had won 7 All-Irelands previously, as stated, there was no cup, kind of only medals were received by the players. This new Liam McCarthy Cup had only been lifted for the first time by Limerick in the championship of the year previously in 1921. So then, Watt Dunphy of Luffney, Carrigeen, Munkine became the first Kilkenny captain to lift the Liam McCarthy Cup. An interesting bit of trivia here that pops up in quizzes every now and again. That cup now is in the GA Museum, having been decommissioned in the 1980s. Interestingly, Liam Fennelly is the only man to have been presented with the old and new Liam McCarthy Cups as captain in 1983 and 1992 respectively. Now to move away from hurling matters if I can, thankfully by April 1923 the nearly weekly news of Kilkenny fatalities as a result of the Civil War violence began to reduce, thank God. Other tragedies did, however, start filling up the newspaper inches. In one such case, Thomas Miller, a native of Knocktofer, was found dead on the main street in Ballyhale on the morning of the 14th of April. Michael Hennebury, who was the porter at Ballyhale railway station, found him dead on a heap of stones at around 8:30 a.m. in the morning. He had known the deceased well, as the deceased used to travel between Ballyhale and Tomstown on the train nearly every day. The previous afternoon, Miller had been drinking in Thomas Shefflin's pub in the village of Ballyhale, but it had left later that evening. It was the coroner's verdict that Miller went to sleep on top of a pile of stones and subsequently died from exposure. He was 76 years old. And yes, that Shefflin name is a great-granddad of Henry Shefflin. The pub Chef's is still there, although not in use anymore. Now, an even more harrowing event occurred in nearby Mullinavass later in April. Little William Holden, who was 1.5 years old, died as a result of burns he received in the family home in Rochestown, Mullinavass. On the evening of Saturday the 21st of April, his mother Mary Holden had gone on an errand to get materials for a confirmation outfit for one of her eldest sons. She left William and 2 other siblings in the family home in the care of their older brother Patrick, who was aged 8 at the time. Mary's husband John was still at his employment at a nearby farm. When Mary returned, she discovered that William had been badly burnt. Now, sadly, he passed away 2 days later as a result of his injuries. Patrick Holden told his mother that their neighbour, 64-year-old Patrick Elward, had come into the house, lifted Willie from his bed and put him on the fire grate over the open fire. Elward was described in the court case as a returned American, having lived nearly 40 years in the United States. Since his return, he had been in some kind of dispute with the Holden family. Elward said the quarrel had started as a result of some of the Holden children chasing his sow around the yard, while he also believed they had dirtied his spring well. And the same morning as the incident in question, he had become very angry after the Holden's goats entered his yard. At the inquest, Elward strongly refuted all allegations against him. He went on to state, "There is no man in his senses would take a child like that and put it in the fire. There's no man would do it." There was an attempt made then to swear in 8-year-old Patrick Holden, but as he did not attend school very much, he could not read the oath. The coroner then allowed his evidence to be heard unsworn. Patrick Holden repeated his version of what had happened that evening. After all the evidence had been heard, the jury returned an open verdict stating that the child died of shock and toxemia as a result of burns, but that there was no sufficient evidence to show how the child came to get into the fire. That was not the end of the story, however. A few weeks later, Patrick Elward was arrested on a charge of murder. In the subsequent court case in Dublin, 8-year-old Patrick Holden and his 5-year-old brother Michael both testified against Elward. Patrick stated, "Paddy Elward came and knocked on the door. I opened it and he came in and said, 'What do you mean letting those goats into my haggard?' He then broke a mug. He fell up along the bed and took the child and put it across the fire. I tried to take my brother Willie off the fire. He," that's Elward, "would not let me." End quote. Hard to believe, but 5-year-old Michael Holden was also called as a witness. He said that he saw Patrick Elward burning William on the fire. Michael also said Paddy tried to take the child off the fire, but Pat Elward rose a stick at him. And he also heard Elward say, "Don't let them goats into my haggard anymore." Another medical witness described Patrick Elward as mentally abnormal. The jury in the trial returned a verdict of guilty and Patrick Elward was sentenced to death by hanging. However, his sentence was later commuted to penal servitude for life. Elward was to have further good fortune. Nearly 10 years later, in 1932, the country was gripped in scenes of unparalleled religious fervour on account of the Eucharistic Congress being held in Dublin that year. Clemency and forgiveness were the order of the day, and Patrick Elward was one of a batch of prisoners who were released on compassionate grounds. He returned to his home in Rochestown, Monlevas, where he passed away of a stroke a few years later in 1935, aged 76 years. They weren't the only sad stories from 1923, as on the 10th of June, there was another sad tragedy, this time in the city. James Lambert, who was 73 years old, went walking on the canal walk down by the castle. Lambert, who was a widower and former sergeant in the British Army, was a resident in Evans Asylum. Now, this was located where the present-day Butler Gallery is. It's in the same building, so it's very close to John's Bridge and the Canal Walk. Although the name suggests an asylum, some residents may have had little mental health issues, but were perhaps elderly and needed some level of care. Some would, though, have had dementia. Not long after he went out for his walk, another walker saw the body of Lambert floating in the River Nore. It looks like he had fallen in what was a very tragic accident. Now, it wasn't the only River Nore tragedy in 1923. In October, Edward Barton of Green Street, Kilkenny, failed to return home. He had been employed as a billiard maker in the Home Rule Club in the city, which is very close to Evans Asylum. And the Home Rule Club, of course, is still there. He was last seen leaving the Home Rule Club at 11:30 p.m. on the 13th of October. However, 2 weeks later, his body was discovered down the river in Thomastown. He was 37 years old. It is most likely he fell in the river while walking home after having been socialising in the Home Rule Club for the night. In another story, during the height of the summer in Kilkenny City, there was an anti-dust campaigners writing to the Kilkenny people. "We take for granted now that the roads and footpaths are tarmacked or cemented these days, but 100 years ago, most of the surfaces were basically kind of like compacted soil. There would have been horses around the city too for transport, and then during the dry summer months, this would rise a lot of dust." And then, of course, the opposite was true in the winter with lots of mud. The anti-dust complainers said Kilkenny was enveloped in a choking, blinding shroud, which was detrimental to the optics and the apparel. In other words, it was getting into your eyes and dirtying all your lovely clothes. So, although people give out about the littering that goes on nowadays, or the potholes, things could be a lot worse. On another slightly lighter note, the newly formed Civic Guard, later the Garda Síochána, put the kibosh on one Urlingford farmer's fledgling enterprise in February 1923. When the police entered the property of 54-year-old William Paddle, who was a farmer from the islands in Urlingford, they found him in the process of attending to a distillery still, which was in full working order. They also found a petrol tin full of Mountain Dew, which was the colloquial name for poutine. All the illicit alcohol was seized by the Civic Guard. In the subsequent court case in Johnstown, Paddle admitted to the offence but said he'd got nothing for his barley that year and that he thought it was no harm in making the Mountain Dew. The judge, though, fined him £100, which was a huge amount of money then, but was reduced to £10 because of his hardened circumstances. Now, in June 1923, the Bishop of Dunedin in New Zealand came home to a hero's welcome in Kilkenny. Dr. James Wyse was a native of the city, and he was originally from St. Patrick's Parish, I believe. He went to school in St. Kieran's and later trained as a priest there. This son of Kilkenny received the freedom of the city upon his return, and there was a large crowd on the parade to hear Bishop Wyse make his acceptance speech. Also making a speech, but slightly different, on the parade in June 23 was Mary McSweeney. Now, she was the sister of Terence McSweeney, that former mayor of Cork, who had died on hunger strike nearly 3 years previously in October 1920. Mary herself actually had been on hunger strike just 7 months before her appearance in Kilkenny, and she was then protesting against her incarceration and by extension the Free State government. After 1 month on hunger strike, she became very ill and was released to hospital. And although the Civil War was technically over at this stage for about a month, Mary did not hold back. Although it was her first time ever in Kilkenny, it was nearly 3 years to the day her brother Terence stood in the exact same spot on the parade to make a speech in support of the Irish Republic and the Irish language. Although Mary had spent a large part of the previous year in prison, she obviously was not afraid of getting rearrested again, as she lambasted the Free State government, especially the local TD in Kilkenny, Carlow, W.T. Cosgrave. She said, quote, "Mr. Cosgrave stood before the people of Kilkenny and told them he would deliver the goods. But what has Mr. Cosgrave delivered to the people of Kilkenny? He's delivered about 15,440 men and women in jail. He has delivered the bodies of Harry Boland, Rory O'Connor, Liam Mellows and the noble Erskine Childers. He has delivered to them the dead bodies of over 100 Irishmen slain because they were true to the oath Cosgrave himself broke." End quote. She then went on to say that Collins and Griffith must have been either drunk or drugged when they signed that treaty, so no holding back there. Now, old age pensioners received a warning by the local health board in Kilkenny in 1923. Thomas Tracy, who was the secretary of the Kilkenny Board of Health at the time, wrote that any person in receipt of an old age pension was not legally entitled to home help. If payment had been made in such cases, the balance would be surcharged. Basically, if you were lucky enough to live to get your state's old age pension, you were automatically disqualified from getting home help. In other words, you couldn't get both of them. And remember, at this time, the old age pension age was 70 years and over, nearly 10 years beyond average life expectancy. So again, as bad as people say we are nowadays, it could be worse. Luckily, there is a lot more social supports there than was available to our ancestors. Now, a terrible tragedy occurred near Castlewarren on the 28th of October 23. Just to tell the story, there was three teenage brothers, Michael, Thomas and John Power, who went off down the fields from their home with air guns. They were out on the Sunday afternoon to shoot rabbits. If they killed any, they would bring them back to their mother, who would cook them, which was quite normal for this time around Kilkenny. Now, when they were down the fields near the Barnafay River, they heard a shot go off near them. Here then they met another group of teenage boys, Thomas and John Keeley and Jim O'Connell. Thomas Keeley had an old shotgun and had just shot a dog. All six of them then went hunting rabbits near Coolgraney Cove. Michael Power was frightening the rabbits, trying to get them to run. Thomas Keeley joked at one stage he could shoot that fella too, aiming the gun generally in Michael Power's direction. He later said he was nearly sure he had taken out the cartridge out of the shotgun. However, the gun went off and Michael Power was hit at close range. Unfortunately, he died shortly afterwards. He was just 15 years old. Thomas Keeley, as you can imagine, was very traumatised and said he would jump in the river to end his own life, but he was talked out of it. He was later charged with the murder of Michael Power. So it was a terrible accident and tragedy, most likely caused by teenage boys trying to impress each other, something which, of course, is a timeless trait in teenage boys, unfortunately. On a slightly lighter note again, there was almighty rows in the Kilkenny Golf Club in 1923 over whether the new golf club pavilion should have a bar in it. The club was split between the wets, who wanted the bar license, and the dries, who were totally opposed to it. This was a time when abstinence and the pioneer organisation held much sway, so there was arguments on both sides. In the end, though, the wets had their way. And I think on that slightly humorous note, we'll leave it there for today. Just to thank you all once again for listening, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time.